One of the most talked about and potentially most consequential issues before the Indiana General Assembly this session grew out of a 4-page resignation letter submitted in December to Governor Eric Holcomb. In it, the director of the Indiana Department of Child Services, the agency charged with protecting the state's youngest residents from abuse and neglect, told the governor that she refused to be, quote, complicit in decreasing the safety, permanency, and well-being of children who have nowhere else to turn. Now, specifically, Mary Beth Bonaventura complained that the Holcomb administration had effectively stripped her of her ability to run the agency, that it had tolerated woefully antiquated technology, that it had alienated foster parents, child placement agencies, and residential treatment facilities, and that it had sought spending cuts that, she said, all but ensure children will die. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll examine the former director's criticism and the flurry of activity it triggered. Holcomb's Republican administration hired an out-of-state consulting group to look into the agency's operation, while Democratic lawmakers demanded a more immediate, more decisive response, calling for a legislative investigation into the agency's alleged missteps and, if necessary, a special session to impose corrective measures. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researcher Phil Owens is creating new ways to map soil functions, improve plant growth, and increase crop yields, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
The Alabama-based consulting firm hired to evaluate the Department of Child Services isn't expected to release its final report until June, long after the General Assembly has concluded this year's session. A few of the challenges that face the agency, however, are already well documented. For example, despite supposed limits on the number of children assigned to them, the state's frontline caseworkers are overworked and often undertrained, leading to low morale and high turnover. We also know that child maltreatment deaths are up in the state, as are the number of kids who are being cared for outside their homes. In Indiana, the home removal rate is about 13 children per 1,000, well over twice the national rate. Indiana now has close to 17,000 kids in out-of-home care, compared with fewer than 9,000 just 5 years ago. Joining me to look at how we ended up where we are and at what can be done to fix the problem are Republican Senator Andy Zaia of Huntington, Democratic Senator Eddie Melton of Gary, Tammy Silverman, President and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, which seeks to promote the healthy development of young Hoosiers, and Demetrius Hutchins, who spent much of her childhood, unhappily, in foster care and group homes before earning a series of college degrees, including a doctorate in education, and becoming a researcher at Indiana University. Impressive. Thank you all for being here.
Good morning. Thank
you. I know some of you have solutions, not solutions, but at least remedies that might help some of the issues, and I do want to get to that. But first, let's go back in time. Senator Zay, how did we get to this point?
Oh, it's tough to determine its complete history, but I think the most recent history that has contributed to a lot of the expansion of these DCS cases, Chin's cases, and this whole troubled family dynamic that we're working with this age group really, in my impression, goes to the opioid crisis, the challenges we've seen with addiction, the growing numbers of folks in addiction, and the, a lot of folks involved in these agencies will say that these kids are unfortunately the outliers. And, that's been my concern since I've got here, when I've learned about this. And, I came to Indianapolis from back home to try and make Indiana better and get involved in situations and help. And this one kind of found me, if you will. And between the opioid crisis and the number of kids involved in these cases, this is a generation. And that's really why we do what we do. It's to be here for the next generation, to create opportunity, to create education opportunity, business opportunity. And we've got to do that, and we've got to find a way to bring services in to support these families, and particularly these children.
Well, you mentioned the passion that you bring to this, and or at least you developed after you arrived in Indianapolis. But I think there are 14 bills related to Department of Child Services that were introduced this session. I think 9 got out of their house of origin.
Right.
And to illustrate your point, 6 of them bear your name as either author or co-author. So clearly it's the subject that's seemingly near and dear to your heart.
Well, I'm a father. I'm a father of five, and to me, to be in the position we are as legislators, myself and Senator Melton, it would be irresponsible to not put myself in that arena. I don't pretend to have all the answers. I don't know that I have all the answers, but I'm trying to learn, get educated, be a voice for these kids, and be an advocate for the agencies that are on the ground and the folks that are doing the work every day. We got to make sure we're not getting in the way of good things that are happening. But more importantly, we need to make sure that we are leveling off, or hopefully decreasing, both the scourge of addiction as well as these cases with the kids out of the home, as you mentioned, or Chin's cases and those kinds of things.
And I would just echo two of the things that the senator has said. One, I think oftentimes when people think of removals, they think of acute physical abuse, right? And they think of kids, you know, and we've unfortunately heard those stories, and those cases do exist. But in relation to the opioid crisis and all the addictions, a lot of those removals, in fact, 52%, according to the Department of Children's Services, are due to acute neglect, right? And so
parents are simply stoned or out of their mind.
Absolutely.
And unable to provide food or...
You got it.
The addiction
is
a priority over being a parent, and they'll do anything to that end.
And so those children aren't getting the food, they're not getting the medical care, they're maybe not getting to school. And obviously, all of those things will compound. And again, I think to what you said, as so many of us being parents and all that, with 1.5 million children in the state, that's about 20% of our population. But we often say, obviously, they're 100% of our future. So if we're not doing something Absolutely. Right now for those kids, it's going to have ramifications 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Do you agree it's a simple, I shouldn't use the word simple in the context of this issue, but the opioid crisis, clearly Indiana, southern Indiana especially, has been hit hard. But when you look at the numbers, Indiana is way off the charts even compared to its neighboring states. So Ohio's been hit hard, Illinois, southern Illinois has been hit hard, and yet our removal rate is more than twice. Is it as simple as pointing a finger at the opioid crisis, do you think, Senator?
Well, like Senator Zay mentioned, I think it's a very complex situation. And I think we can't just look at one particular contributing factor, although it is a major factor as well. But I think there are many variables that we have to consider in looking at this at a holistic perspective in terms of how do we support, like you mentioned, the departments, the caseworkers, the supervisors, to ensure they have the resources and the support as legislators from the state of Indiana to do the job they need to do to make sure the children are safe.
And we should point out that some of these challenges and concerns, although they have certainly spiked in recent years, they really go back to the origin of this department. Mitch Daniels created it, brought together some other agencies that had related tasks back in 2005. One of the first things he did was an executive order, I think his second day in office, and then it was later codified in statute. But that was because there was a crisis then. And David Long, Senate President Pro Tem this week, said, you know, I've been around 22 years, and even though we didn't call it Department of Child Services, whatever we called it, it still had problems.
Yeah.
Now, you've had a perspective, Demetrius, that maybe we haven't had from the seeing it from the inside.
Absolutely.
Is this always been a challenge? What's your experience?
Seeing it from the inside and then also now as someone who's looking at it from an outside perspective as the organization as a whole and reviewing data, yes, this problem, like Senator Melton has stated, has been in existence. It's nothing new. Before 22 years ago, we didn't have what it looks like now. But I can also say that as far as a complete overall audit of what the organization has been doing and what's going on, or the report that has been sanctioned now, the evaluation has been sanctioned now, had not been done before. And it's something, and a type of evaluation that needs to happen on a continual basis, not just when it hits crisis. The opioid addiction has contributed, but it's only managed to exacerbate the issue that has already been there to begin with and hadn't been dealt with. When you have something like a crisis like this that is increasing the number of children that's entering care, if the system is not together to begin with in the first place, there's no way that it's going to be able to handle this influx of children coming in.
And what was, for you, I know I've read some of the things you've written on this and you've spoken about your background. Was it the lack of permanence that was most unsettling to you? I know at some point you sort of saw the light, and obviously you've got the doctorate to prove it.
My experience while at DCS was the turnover rate in caseworkers. Mm-hmm. There were so many different caseworkers that I dealt with that none of them could get a handle on my situation or what resources I may have needed at that particular time, because there was always someone new coming in and having to relearn what's going on with this child in this particular case. So that was my issue, and it wasn't until I got into a private agency that permanency happened for me, and I was able to get pushed to go to college, and they were able to focus and see me as a person instead of a number and say, hey, she's really intelligent, let's push her on this path of higher education. But that happened after I went to a private agency. So the turnover is still there at DCS. Mm-hmm. There are still a lot of problems with DCS, and they're like, in my opinion, there are two main issues that have to be addressed, but we'll get into that. But yes, the issues have been there. They should not exist. First of all, we shouldn't have child welfare, right? Everyone should be taking care of their children. Absolutely. And we should have all the resources that families need to take care of their children and bring them up in great homes. But child welfare does exist. But as it exists does not mean that it needs to fail the children either. So there's a lot of internal things that need to happen. There's been a lot of turnover on the higher level as well as the lower level in DCS.
And that's interesting, because even though, as I mentioned, the consultant from Alabama will not come out with a final report, the governor had committed to the General Assembly that there would be monthly updates. And some of the clear indicators, in addition to sort of these removal rates, which are, I won't say off the charts, but are certainly higher than other states and certainly higher than the national average, you see an inability to keep and train the caseworkers, and also attorneys who, that's showing up as a problem, experienced attorneys who can handle these types of cases.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're,
well,
is that,
we are
are they putting
that.
Their finger on the
that.
Problem
Absolutely.
From your perspective?
Part of the problem, right? And I think that's what we're talking about is, you know, you're asking the caseworkers, you're asking the attorneys to do heroic measures that, you know, if you were talking about that, if an employer was asked to have visits, regular visits with the number of folks that these caseworkers are asked to do, they're not going to be able to get that in-depth knowledge. They're not going to be able to wrap their heads around it. Same for these attorneys. You know, I think that people go into it really wanting to help, and there's a dedication to help. And then the reality of the positions are just overwhelming, right? And so then we're losing good folks that have
the pay rate that I think it's what, 30, mid-30s for caseworkers.
Absolutely.
And I saw attorneys on average for the agency, average mid-50s, I think.
And then sometimes you're asking, you know, folks a year out of school to go into situations that can be very, very volatile, right? And we've often talked about that when you work with those individuals. You know, how do you prepare a young person that's a year out of school to walk into one of those situations, and not only walk into one, but walk into numerous ones? One of the other challenges that we're seeing is that some counties that have high removal rates don't have a high number of caseworkers, right? So those children are being placed in foster families in different counties, which makes it even higher to spend quality time.
And of course, you know, for people who aren't familiar with this agency, the backbone of the sort of the hands-on care that's provided and supervision is done not by the agency itself, but by private agencies,
yes,
such as what you
yep.
described, or foster families. What are there, about 6,000, 6,500 across the state by child placement agencies? So it's not as if there's a state employee who's being dispatched to handle everything from start to finish.
And that's where we need to be careful. I think there are definitely challenges within the agencies which have been shared, and we need to, as legislators, stand behind them and give them the support they need to do the job. But the other side of that coin is these foster families are the folks that are stepping up and doing that. And there's been a little bit of a backlash with them where they're feeling the brunt of some of this. And they need to know they're supported.
Absolutely.
And they need to know that we are there advocating for them, working for them, because they're foster families out there doing heroic work, doing yeah. yeoman's work to help build these bridges, to keep some stability and introduce the children to the opportunity like Demetrius shared. So, I mean, we got to make sure that we're continuing to do that, because if we make it difficult on them, they're falling out of the system too. They're going to lose their willingness to be a part, and that's only going to make it more difficult. I have a family family in my hometown that has fostered 160 kids since 1981, and she's actually a second generation. Her mother fostered 80-some children. So you have a family there that's committed and dedicated. And I asked her.
Because no one does it for the money. I mean, there is money involved, but it's not going to offset the cost.
She assured me that they lost money in doing that. But she had a great historical perspective, and we honored them a while back down in the State House. And I said, what's changed? She simply said, we just don't feel supported like we used to. And so we need to make sure publicly forums like this, as legislators, when we're back home speaking, as well as other agencies, that we're just standing up and acknowledging them for their efforts, and of course looking at the detailed things that Senator Melton and I look at to make sure they have the support they need.
I think you hit on a very important point, speaking about the foster parents and providing them the support and the resources. I want to go back to something that the doctor mentioned in terms of the turnover rate. I think this is an opportunity for as legislators to kind of look at what can we do legislatively to create programs or support for caseworkers and supervisors to ensure we incentivize those that are doing this hard work that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's very taxing on them as well to deal with these high-profile cases, as dealing with individual families across a particular county. We had a discussion this session talking about how can we look at loan forgiveness for some of the student loans of caseworkers. Something like that will be an incentive for individuals that may not be making as much as they would like to in this particular field. But what can we do as legislators, as supporters of this department, to ensure we give them the resources and the support that we appreciate them in the hard work that they're doing to try to protect the children?
In fact, one of the bills, I think, is the so-called Foster Parent Bill of Rights, which basically puts in the code certain things that, and I think I've lost track of where all of them are, that likely will win passage, or I guess never
I
say.
So. And I think that speaks overtly to just what we're talking about, that they know that they're supported. And what I found in some of the deficiencies in reviewing the agency and hearing from a lot of foster families and even caseworkers and stuff is just this collaboration. Collaboration between different groups isn't there, which was the idea behind one of my bills, where we have intentionality in the school corporation DCS being able to communicate. We had a child that was 7 years old, weighed 20 pounds, dropped off on the first day of school, saying, no issue, here's a child that's in the system. And it's like, wait a second.
Right now, there are no statistics on what kind of educational path they take, I guess there's a point of contention but
certainly
this would
in this case,
we're
well beyond education opportunities. It was really caretaking, I think it's essential that the DCS and their knowledge in this case can be shared. And there's a privacy concern there, and I get that, but schools also operate in the domain of privacy. But when we have the life and well-being of a child at stake, there is no reason a school corporation, DCS, and even a foster family can't communicate for the best interest. We don't need to put it on the billboard out in front of the school. We don't need to flash it through the news media. But for them to be able to sit down, collaborate, and bring the resources and know the issues surrounding this, in this particular case, this child, it's just essential for everybody to be able to do the best job possible.
And that bill, I think, was amended to add in homeless kids as well.
A separate tracking piece where we're learning about the foster kids in education
as
well.
I guess it sort of fits together people who are not. Is this the kind of coordination that you think is essential here?
Absolutely. Both senators hit on something that is crucial and important. And I think if it's addressed, then it'll definitely help alleviate some of the issues that we see in DCS. One of them is interagency collaboration. Mm-hmm. That is a huge issue. There are tons of organizations and agencies that work with these youth and that serve these youth and have the resources to help these youth. But they don't have the data that they need from IDCS to be able to run some analysis and see what's effective, what's not effective, how they go about approaching things, maybe present some policies for you all that's based in the data itself. So that's one issue.
Of course, according to the consultant, it's like a computer system that's maybe one step above an abacus. Very much antiquated, at least in terms of some of the tracking.
But. Absolutely. The second major issue, which I think is bigger than just the interagency collaboration and the data sharing issue, is this issue of when you have agency providers, you're absolutely right. IDCS does rely on outside agencies to help them with some of their services, but what we get from the agencies or what we're hearing from those agencies is the amount of resources and support that they get from DCS is not there. You have agencies that are doing good work, that work directly with youth. For instance, the opioid issue is going to, it's not just an issue that's going to go away. These kids that are being taken away from their families because of this crisis, of four children that are being taken away, one of them will not be able to go back into their household ever again. So this is not an issue that, oh, we fix the drug problem and then that child can go back. There are children who will never be able to return back to their homes because it's not just an issue of substance abuse. There's malnutrition. There's a whole bunch of,
we had problems well before that. I mean,
absolutely.
So this is not an issue. Some people would say, oh, there might be some bad actors out there among foster families or agencies that are on the take and not providing the services. This is not, as you, from your perspective, the issue.
No, and I was going to add one other big kind of elephant in the room is the number of kids who cannot live with their parents, who are living with family members who are in no way connected with DCS. So this kinship care, you know, some of our data, and I love what you were saying because you're speaking the language. If we don't know the true numbers, how do you create solutions, right? So we have to have that data. We have to have the real numbers. We have to be very clear-eyed about what the issue is. But for every one child in foster care, it's estimated there are 20 children in our state who are living with family members because it's not safe for them to live at home. So that kinship care, now DCS has a way to bring them into the fold. They need to become licensed foster families, and they can do that and be family members only, right? And so, but not everybody knows that. And we need to support those families because an awful lot of them are senior citizens. A lot of them are over 60. They're living at the poverty level.
So there's some education that needs to take place here.
That's very
real. I have churches starting support groups for grandparents raising grandparents.
It's becoming, I guess,
it's not visitation, it's raising.
They're raising them, right?
This notion of education and fact-finding. Senator Melton, you want to have a two-year interim study committee. I mean, those who probably, and I don't know anybody's actually voted against, I think it was unanimous support received at committee level and so forth, but they might say, haven't we been studying this enough? Don't we know the problems? And in fact, some Democrats early in the session were saying they were skeptical of the Alabama group's work because they said that's not immediate enough in terms of swift action. But now we're saying two-year study. Do we need to study it more? Really?
Well, I think we need a standing committee to address issues as they arise.
Devoted simply to this narrow...
Department of Child Services. I believe some of the allegations and issues that come up are things that I believe legislators should be aware of at a constant basis. So we can be able to craft policy to ensure that we're doing the right thing that we can do because these children live in our districts, right, across the entire state. But in our caucus, we support what the governor's trying to do with having this third party coming in. I believe legislators also have a role in being informed. And I agree with Senator Zay said earlier, not being in a way, but also being a resource and being a partner to figure out, instead of corralling everyone in emergency situations, we should be prepared to interview caseworkers, case managers, talk to the providers, talk to foster parents to figure out what should we be doing or what should we be looking at, and also interview and talk to the third party that's doing this research to figure out what should we do as a state holistically to approach this issue.
I was just going to say to Senator Melton's point, you know, I think that's the study committee and the ongoing study committee is essential. The legislation that I've crafted and much of it I support, it's been organic. It's come from stories. It's come from situations.
It's a real life example.
Yeah,
it's come from
folks
from your district.
And I believe it's important for me to stand by as a legislator and do nothing is not the way I am and not what I'm about in being a senator and holding this position. But more importantly, what institutionally. And I think that's where the study committee and the collaboration of agencies may come out, where we can craft a more permanent, more dynamic policy. And I mean that from the standpoint of having a broader effect on all this. I mean, we're talking about the next generation here. And, you know, you've taken it to another level. We're talking about caseloads in the 29,000, and you talk about those that aren't statistically in that.
Right.
You're talking about a lost generation, possibly.
Right.
And we need to find that opportunity. We need to give them the educational resources, and we need to hold up mentors like yourself to give them that vision, that dream, that our kids have.
And it's more than just putting money into the DCS administration fund. Right. It's more about putting more money into the family children fund.
The governor has pointed out that a lot of money has. The General Assembly has put money in, and his administration had freed up additional
significant amount of money. It's different from putting it in the administration fund versus the family and children fund. The family and children fund is where these partner agencies get their resources from. So if we keep skimming off of that top budget, then we have the agencies, the outside agencies that can alleviate some of the issues for DCS that don't have the resources that they need to help.
I wish we had 2 years to study it, because the 20-something minutes went very fast, and I'm getting the signals that we're out of time, unfortunately. Obviously, this is a significant issue for the state, and my head actually is spinning more than I realized, even when you talk about some of the things, Tammy, that you mentioned. We'll have to do this again and see how this is a work in progress, I believe. Thank you, though, for coming and sharing your thoughts on this topic. And my guests have been Republican Senator Andy Zay of Huntington, Democratic Senator Eddie Melton of Gary, Tammy Silverman, President and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, and Demetrius Hutchins, an education researcher at Indiana University. With the legislative session winding down, the four caucus leaders return to discuss what passed, what didn't, and why on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, now part of Hanna News Service. Ed, this problem has been going on so long and is so enormous at so many levels. Where do you start, and is this even a solvable problem when you look at it?
This is going to be something that affects the next generation of governors, John. You know, it's almost like the situation we had with the mental health system in the state. You know, you go back and you reread Governor Welch's autobiography, and the mental health system was a problem back in the early 1960s. It plagued every governor through Governor O'Bannon, who finally ended up closing Muscatatuck State Hospital as kind of the last straw and turning it back to the community. And to a certain extent, I think you're going to see that the child services and the child welfare system is going to be the next mental health system issue for the state. We're going to be trying to figure out how to solve this. It's not necessarily a solvable problem. And then you have all the additional catalysts in between, you know, whether it's an education question or Senator Zay pointed out, an opioid question. You've got all these intervening factors, and it just becomes very, very difficult. And you don't know what all the answers are. You don't know what the inputs even are. And that's why Governor Holcomb's trying to take some time with the consultants review to see where we ought to go from here.
How political, I mean, from a partisan standpoint, we saw that we had two senators from different parties, and they generally agreed. I don't know if that's indicative of everything, but Democrats have been trying to score some points here. Is this in the end going to be a potent political weapon?
Yeah, I think it's political with a small p, and that the Democrats aren't necessarily trying to score points with respect to the governor. It's just that the Republicans are being a little bit more quiet about the timetable than the Democrats. The Democrats want to see some action. The Republicans are willing to give the governor the time that he needs on this.
So we'll see the report in June, special session? I guess it depends, right?
Depends upon what the report says.
Governor's
willing.
All right. Ed, as always, thanks for your insight. See you next week. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Chwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
Purdue researchers are finding new ways to treat cancer, provide drug-free therapies, advance wound repairs, reduce chronic illness symptoms, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.